The Breast Cancer Research Centre in WA is extensively one of the busiest breast cancer trials unit in Australia. We've conducted 84 trials, mostly sort of international collaborative trials. So we tend to be a fairly key player in the breast cancer research space. In saying that, we 2 weeks ago we were key recruiters for a drug called neratinib, which reduces the reoccurrence of breast cancer, and that's about to be FDA approved, so approved in the US. But we've had patients here that have been on that since 2009, so benefited from that obviously 8 to 10 years sooner than it becomes available to the general public. So we see about 12 new breast cancer patients a week. And obviously, if they're eligible to be on research, they go on the research. All our research is about benefiting patients. So if there's a cohort of patients that might benefit from the next regime of treatments, we will do the research and we can get patients on that, obviously, at no cost to them.
If you've been making this drug available to people before, obviously it's FDA, you know, as part of this research, how would one go about doing that?
Well, basically, we've got Professor Arlene Chan, who's the principal investigator. So she's a key player in breast cancer research worldwide and has extensive collaborations with key players around the world. So we have access to end phase trials. So the safety aspects have been done, the efficiency aspects. So it's pretty well the last phase of the research, and yeah, it just needs to be ticked off and approved. So we can we've got access to that, and obviously, if it's going to benefit our patients, we look to be part of that research.
So then, how does one become a patient? Do you need to be referred by somebody that Dr. Chan knows, or
yeah, effectively, we run a clinical unit with oncologists and breast surgeons, so okay. They get referred to Professor Chan, and then they get access, and that's how they get on the project.
So who, if you don't mind, is paying for this?
They're pharmaceutical trials. So what happens is that budgets get approved to for the various trials. You mentioned what makes us unique is Professor Chan has obviously a fairly extensive clinical load. So 60% of her week would be seeing patients and 40% would be overseeing research. For the whole time, the last 17 years, she's done that research pro bono. So effectively, that's been put back into surplus. So anyone that donates to us, it actually 100% actually goes directly to research because the surplus covers the operating expenses. So we tend to be sort of fairly unique in that regard, you know, when you compare charities and donating to various causes.
I want to talk to you about one study that you're doing because you're talking about pharmaceutical studies there, but you're also doing a study into the offspring of people with breast cancer, what children go through when mothers are diagnosed with breast cancer. How has that come about and what are you looking for?
The reason we're doing that is because we work on sort of evidence-based treatments here, and the donations people give us go into what we call investigator-initiated trials. So if we identify a potential gap in the process for breast cancer patients, we're doing this research to identify key issues that might affect offspring. Mm. The reason we're doing that is because studies have been done in the US and Netherlands, which identify a range of issues with the children of breast cancer patients, but it hasn't really been done in the Australian context. So we're hoping to verify the studies that have been done overseas or look to identify any gaps within the Australian patient cohort. Mm. Because in 2 years' time, we're moving to an integrated breast cancer centre where we're going to also have support services, that whole counselling psychological arm, and we're moving to develop programs for patients, their partners, and the children of patients. So we just want this done so we can then verify sort of how we're going and
how you go about it.
Tailor programs, yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. Can you talk to me briefly about some of the things that offspring and children would feel and go through?
Yes. One of the things that has been found overseas is that it tends to impact the later teen female children around aspects of, my mum's been diagnosed with cancer. How's that going to affect me? I need to do a lot more around the house. It affects their socialisation in regards to the balance between, how much I need to help. So what's been found is that there's sort of significant issues with the later teens. So we need to develop programs to make sure that we're looking after the whole family unit.
Mm. You're listening to ABC Radio Adelaide. I'm Ali Clark, and that's Carmelo Arto, who is the Chief Executive Officer of the Breast Cancer Research Centre in Western Australia. I now want to say good morning to a patient who has been at that Breast Cancer Centre, Narelle. How are you this morning, Narelle?
Yeah, good, thank you. How are you?
Good. Now, when did you first find out that you had breast cancer?
I was diagnosed with early breast cancer at the age of 31, so that's 9 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And at that time, I had a double mastectomy and began a course of chemotherapy and radiation. And I think at that point, I just thought I was cured. So I was lucky enough to get 6 years of remission.
Mm-hmm.
And then my cancer returned into my bones in June 2015.
In that 6 years and from that first diagnosis, did it change the way you looked at life? And did it change?
Oh, definitely. I jam-packed that much into 6 years. I probably put more into that time than most sort of do in a lifetime. So you definitely are appreciative of life itself. But as I said, I just kind of thought that I was cured. Like you could have blown me down with a feather when the cancer had come back.
Mm. And that moment, and then I guess sharing that with your husband and also children, how do you process doing that again?
It's heartbreaking because I think most people in general, not even people that have had early breast cancer, don't really understand that once the cancer metastasizes that you are incurable. So it's you go through a grieving process. You grieve the life that you once had. And I don't think anything really prepares you for that moment. And My husband's, his whole life got turned upside down. He was heartbroken. And my children, my eldest is at an age, sorry.
That's okay.
My eldest is at an age where she understands that her time is limited with her mum. And she's at a point where she realises that she has to take on that mother role of my youngest daughter, who is only 9.
Mm.
So it's a really hard path to walk for anybody.
Mm. I'll give you time to catch your breath and return to you, Carmelo. I guess those are the feelings that you were talking about in why you're doing this study, trying to work out how to best support children like Narelle's.
Yeah, what we need to do is we need to make it as seamless a journey as possible. We need to look after the whole family unit and make resources available to them and be the go-to people for them, because we want to minimise the stress for the patient and for the patient's whole family. So it's crucial that we get it right, and that's why we're doing this study as well. And we need to be able to make sure that no one in the family unit might fall through the gaps, because the system is maybe not as well coordinated as it could be at the moment. And whereas now we look after 60% of a patient needs through sort of treatment and research, we're looking to move to 90-95%, where we're actually looking after all the support systems around that and address any concerns a patient might have and be their go-to people for the patient and the patient families. Mm. And the Ali and the Pages of the world, we want to be looking after them as well as part of the whole process.
Well, Narelle, returning to you, when I read your story and based on what Carmelo said there, you write about how do you prepare your husband and daughters for a life without you. Have you taken steps in trying to work out how to do that? I mean, how do you even wrap your mind about that?
I think for me it's all been getting all my finances in order and ensuring that my husband can be a stay-at-home dad. So it's been that's probably been what I've focused on. And I think my husband and I have tried desperately to keep everything so normal for the kids during this time that I think that we probably haven't managed, you know, how they are feeling as a family. We've organised for a psychologist for both of them through their schools who have been hugely supportive. But I think that we probably need to focus more on probably what is grieving counselling for our family together so that they're prepared as best that they can be.
Yeah. So where are you at now, Narelle?
Once I was diagnosed with the metastatic diagnosis, I began on a clinical trial that gave me 15 months of stable, so progression-free survival, which is amazing, but it's obviously never long enough. And then I had progression to my lung and liver. And I think for me that diagnosis was actually the hardest one because you think you're winning the fight and then you realise that you're not. Mm. And Eileen, got me onto another clinical trial, and this was a trial that was targeted at the BRCA gene because I carry the breast cancer 2 gene. And I was lucky enough to get another 9 months of progression-free survival on that. We did have really good results in the first few months. My tumours actually were resolved in my lungs and they halved in my liver. And then just when you think you're doing okay, I had a liver bleed, which we then discovered that my tumours to the liver had increased substantially. So that I've now started another chemo combination, which I started on Monday. So we're just hoping again that we can get, you know, another year would be amazing, and you basically drug hop until you have no options left. And you know, it's having the breast cancer trials unit. Sorry.
No, it's okay.
I'm emotional because I'm unwell, so I'm sorry.
Don't be sorry.
So we're lucky enough to have access to the trials under the breast cancer trials unit that Eileen obviously carries out, because without them, we don't have that extra time. You know, Eileen has, as Carmelo said, she's worked pro bono for 17 years of her life to extend the lives of the people that have metastasized and to better their lives and their outcomes. And without that, I would have been gone a long time ago. And even 10 years ago, if I was in this same position, I probably wouldn't be here.
The roller coaster of being involved in trials, you know, that hope that you spoke of that you felt when you saw that they had reduced. I mean, some people might hear that and think, well, that's a whole nother level of hope and disappointment or heartache that you're putting on to yourself. Have you ever stopped and thought, oh, I don't know if I can do another trial? Or is it just
we don't have any options. Yeah. We're yep. terminal. You have very limited options that are available to extend your life, and in the hope that you were that in that 1% that could potentially, you know, live another 10 years, without the trials, you don't have hope. Mm. Like for me personally, at the moment, I've exhausted probably, I won't be able to access a lot of trials now because I have had chemotherapy, and that now limits me, and that terrifies me. Without trials, I don't have that hope. I will be a statistic. You know, I don't think anyone really understands that once you are diagnosed with metastatic breast cancer, that the statistics are that you're going to live for 33 months. It's not long enough. I'm 40 years old. I need to see my children grow up. So without trials, we don't have hope.
Mm-hmm. You scared?
I'm terrified. I'm not terrified for me. It's funny because death has always been something growing up that terrified me. But the moment that you actually do get that terminal diagnosis, everything changes. It's I can't stop thinking about how my husband's going to cope with two girls. I can't stop thinking that he's going to come home to a house and I'm not there. And it's just unfair to think that my kids aren't going to have their mom. And I think the thing that terrifies me mostly is that I'm so terrified that they are going to have breast cancer and I'm not going to be there to help them through. And I think for me, personally, the breast cancer one-stop shop that Arlene's been working her entire life for is going to give me peace knowing that they are going to have all of the support, the care and the research to enable them to not only cope with their diagnosis, but to, you know, to have the hope that they are going to live a long life. You know, this needs to happen.
Mm. Narelle, thank you for being so determined to share your story. It has certainly touched a lot of people, I can guarantee that. So I wish you and your beautiful daughters and husband all the very best. Like you said, you know, the first diagnosis, you packed so much into your 6 years, whatever you're going to pack in now. Have you got plans and things that you want to do, or do you also try to go life as normal, off to school, this is what we're doing?
It really is a combination of life as normal. But there are things that I need, that I want to do with the kids, obviously.
Yeah.
But I think for the moment, it's stay at home and just get my, encourage my children just to keep living and, you know, keep reaching for the stars. And my eldest is obviously going through year 11. She's preparing for what career she wants in life. And I think it's just that I'm really trying to instill in them that, yes, life isn't great at the moment, but you have to keep moving forward.